This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. We are focusing our attention once again on the COVID-19 vaccination program around the world. Now, most countries globally are in the midst of their vaccine rollout, but some countries haven't even started theirs. Data compiled from government sources by the Our World in Data project shows that 85% of shots have been administered worldwide in high and upper middle income countries, but lower income countries have only administered 0.3% of doses.
On top of that, countries are hard hit by the virus, are struggling to battle the more infectious variants now categorized as Alpha, Beta, Delta and Gamma. Many poorer countries are reliant on the vaccine sharing COVAX program, which aims to provide 2 billion doses only by the end of this year. But there has been some, I think, encouraging development because WHO has approved Sinovac, the second developed Chinese vaccine, and this will be included in COVAX.
Yeah, so hopefully it will accelerate the program since COVAX has faced some supply issues due to India's suspension of vaccine exports. So for some developments on the collective effort to vaccinate the world so far, we're speaking this morning with Benjamin Cowling, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today. So with China's Sinovac vaccine now approved, the WHO has said that it will be included in the COVAX program. Will this help address COVAX's major supply issue after India suspended vaccine exports?
Yeah, good morning. It will definitely help. I think the WHO COVAX program, the aim was to get vaccines to everybody that needed a vaccine, that wanted a vaccine within 2 to 3 years. And obviously the major constraint in the timeline is supply. So with the Sinovac vaccine now available to the COVAX program, that means there's more supply and vaccines can go out quicker. Hopefully we'll see more vaccines administered in the next 6 months compared to the previous 6 months.
So Ben, maybe you can help us understand the process of how the WHO approves COVID-19 vaccines, because other vaccines like the third developed Chinese vaccine, CanSino, has submitted clinical trial data, but no WHO review has been scheduled.
Right. So in the WHO, they have a committee for reviewing the information, the evidence, the data on vaccines to decide whether they're going to put their stamp of approval on it. I think their favorite scenario is when other authorities like the FDA, like the European Medicine Agency or others have already approved a vaccine. And then it's fairly straightforward for the WHO to agree that the vaccine's good and fine and should go for it. For the Sinovac vaccine that they've just approved, I guess because it hasn't been approved by FDA, European Medicine Agency, et cetera, they have to do a little bit more reading themselves, going through all the information. They don't have a big team to do that. So my suspicion is they'll maybe do one at a time. So they've done Sinovac, and maybe next on the list to look at is the CanSino vaccine or another one. But they don't have an enormous amount of resources, of manpower to go through these things. And ideally, I think they'd be looking forward to vaccines that have already been approved elsewhere that they can simply follow along and don't need to review everything in minute detail themselves.
So is there a strong case for countries facing persistent supply issues, especially poorer countries? Could they consider carrying out the single dose strategy or delaying the second dose in order to get more jabs into arms, given that new variants are emerging?
I think definitely the first dose first strategy, like the one in the UK, is a really smart idea to get more people to have first doses before starting to give out the second doses. And the example given is, if you have two grandparents, would you rather one of them is fully vaccinated with two doses, or both of them can have one dose each with partial protection? Because that partial protection is going to be not too bad. It's going to be quite good, actually. So first dose first is a great idea, with the second dose coming along maybe 3 or 4 months later. And I think a lot of places should be taking a serious look at that strategy as a way to increase the coverage. For the variants, it's not a major issue. It's been looked at. And actually, the conclusion that I've seen in the scientific literature is that more vaccine coverage, even first dose first with partial coverage, more vaccine coverage is better in terms of reducing the incidence of infections and the threat posed by variants.
So with that in mind, Ben, can we actually mix doses of vaccines, and might a booster be needed to deal with current or future mutations of the virus?
I think vaccine mixing is something that really should have been looked at much more carefully, and it's a missed opportunity. So vaccine mixing is when, instead of getting AstraZeneca first dose, AstraZeneca second dose, you might get AstraZeneca first dose and then Sinovac second dose, or in Malaysia you have BioNTech, maybe BioNTech first dose, AstraZeneca second. But because each manufacturer is doing their own individual trials, they're only looking at using their vaccine and what happens. And I don't think anybody's really taken the lead in putting together, you know, BioNTech plus AstraZeneca, AstraZeneca plus Sinovac, etc. And I think that's really a missed opportunity, because it could work very well. But until the trials have been done, I don't think governments, health authorities are going to really recommend it, because they want to see the data first. But there's really a very strong possibility that it would work quite well.
And Ben, supply, of course, is a key issue when we talk about vaccine distribution. But when we take a look at recently in Malawi, they disposed 20,000 AstraZeneca vaccines which had expired. So beyond supply issues then, how key is the logistics and distribution of vaccines on the ground? How important is it to take a look at whether we are using, whether we have not too much, but not too little?
Yeah, logistics is really, really important. So that means the cold chain, keeping the vaccines at the perfect temperature all the way from when they land at the airport through to when they're delivered and injected into someone's arm. And that's not easy, but that's something that should have been planned for months and months and months. In terms of the expiry dates, quite a few of these COVID vaccines have relatively short shelf lives. And that's just because of the timeline of development. For BioNTech, for example, they weren't able to observe how long it really lasted with in the minus 70 degree freezer. So they just looked for 6 months and it was fine after 6 months. And so they said the shelf life is 6 months. Actually, the shelf life could be much longer. So for the vaccines in Malawi, I'm not sure that it's a shelf life issue. It may be a different issue that led to their disposal. And then the other thing we have to deal with in Hong Kong, we have an issue with vaccine hesitancy. And the government's already said we may have to discard BioNTech vaccines, because although we've got them, they're expiring in August. And it looks at the current rate like we're not going to use them all. And that's really a shame that we have vaccines and we're not using them.
Should there be a global arrangement to ensure no vaccine hogging by any country, or where inventory can be timely redeployed to another country more in need?
Yeah, I think so. And I think maybe with the COVAX program from WHO, one of the ideas would be to send bit by bit. So you can, like in a buffet, you go up to get your food from the buffet and you come back. And if you want more, you can go again. But you can't just hoard an enormous plate of as much as you can fit on your plate, because you've got to let other people have a go as well. So that's a very reasonable idea, to say a million doses at a time, and when you've got through those, then we'll send you some more. And that would really help to maximize the use of all the available doses.
Now, Ben, let's take a look at some other countries like Vietnam. They're planning to mass test its entire population, all 9 million of them, given a spike in COVID-19 cases. They're looking at 100,000 samples per day. Is this feasible?
Sorry, yes. When Wuhan did their mass testing in May of 2020, they tested 10 million people in 10 days. And the way they achieved it was to pool samples. So that means they'll collect maybe samples from 5 people, but they'll put it into the same tube and do the test once. Most of the time it's going to be negative. If it's positive, then they'll go back to those original 5 samples and test each one to see which one was the positive one. That can really be a very efficient way to test large numbers of people. So in Vietnam, they talked about testing millions, tens of millions of people, but I would guess they'll pool samples, maybe 5-1 or 10-1, as a more efficient way to get through things. And then with lab capacity that should have been built up in the past year, it should be a feasible operation. But my question would be, what happens next? When you find people that are positive, what are you going to do? Because testing is not enough. You need to figure out how you're going to isolate people, how you're going to break chains of transmission, and that's not necessarily easy.
So, Ben, in an ideal situation, just following up on that, what would that process look like? You do mass testing, you isolate. What is the ideal situation in that sense?
So I think combined with movement restrictions, and I know in Malaysia you're having movement restrictions right now, if you can do mass testing and identify where the cases are, and then find a way that they'll isolate themselves at home, that their family members would also isolate or quarantine, that can be a really effective way to break up transmission in the community as a whole. Because by doing the mass testing, you can find people that you didn't even know were infected. Maybe they didn't even have symptoms. And then you can isolate them and stop them from passing infection on to other people. Even when the lockdown relaxes, even when the community is going back to normal, the people that were identified as cases could still be isolated if necessary. So I think it could help a lot if the capacity is there. And it's something that could be considered in Malaysia and other parts of the world as well, if numbers are getting too large, if the capacity is there, because it's really a way to find infections in the community that you didn't even know were there. Because otherwise, if you just rely on people coming to the hospital, coming to the clinic, you miss a lot of infections and you miss a lot of opportunities to stop transmission.
Very quickly, Australia's Melbourne city is extending its lockdown to further contain the outbreak, although the country has been successful in controlling infection so far. But the government has been criticised for its slow vaccination rollout. Is this a supply issue or a logistics? Could you give us some light to this?
Yeah, I think it's supply. So they've had trouble getting hold of vaccines. They've now done about 10% of their population with the first dose. So they've still got a long way to go. And I think they've been waiting for more vaccine supplies to come in. So for the current outbreak in Melbourne, vaccines will come too late to help with that. They'll need to do their lockdown to get the numbers back down to zero. And then over the next 3 months or 6 months, look to get vaccine coverage up to a high level.
Ben, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Benjamin Cowling, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong, giving us some insight into the pace of global vaccine.
It was a lot of insight, actually.
It was a lot of insight. Interesting, particularly how some countries are doing mass testing.
And his grandparents' example, I think, was brilliant about whether to choose whether to do both doses or just have a single dose across the board.
Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.